Today on the Trinity College Podcast, I have a brother in the faith, a fellow alumni. He's a pastor of University Baptist Church in Tampa. He has been serving the Lord for decades. He's married. He has a family. And today, I've been looking forward to having him on here for several reasons, and we're going to talk about several of those, especially our Dr. Charles Massey, your mentor. But first of all, foremost, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much, John, for allowing me to come on. I feel very privileged and kind of humbled by this situation, by this opportunity.
Well, I'm so glad to have you on. A few years ago, you received the Salt and Light Award.
Yes, we did. Very honored.
From the Alumni Association, and I was fortunate to be privileged to present that for you on behalf of the college. And what we loved about that, what I loved about when we present that, the only handful of people get that, it's really for faithfulness in the local church. And that's what it's about, faithfulness in the local church. The church is the greatest organization in the world.
Amen.
It's the most diverse organization in the world, and literally is the hands and the heart of God for the world, to reach the world. And your corner of the world in Tampa, you've been serving there for a long time. But I always like to start with the beginning. So how is it? When did you become a Christ follower?
Well, I was raised in Tampa. And as a little boy, I would go to church. In fact, earlier in our pre-podcast conversation, talking about folks that invest in kids and others that are sort of the forgotten. Well, there was a family that was part of our neighborhood. The name was Mr. and Mrs. Capley. And every Sunday morning and every Sunday night, they'd pick me up when I was just a little guy and take me to Castle Heights Baptist Church. It was a small church there in North Tampa, just a bit south of Bougainvillea, or north of Bougainvillea, south of 109th Avenue. And so anyway, I was raised in that environment, very much involved with the church as a kid, and then as a little bit as a youth guy. But some things happened at the church that sort of embittered me towards some of the folks that were there, some of the things that I observed. And as a result of that, I sort of drifted away. And this would be in the mid-60s. And that's when sort of the hippie culture began to rise.
Don't trust anyone over 30.
Yeah, exactly right. And so because of that in church and because of other dysfunctional kind of things that were happening at home, it just attracted me. We were poor. We didn't have much. Both my mom and dad were on Social Security by the time I'm a teenager. And so going to school, I didn't have the nice shirts and the creased pants and the, you know, things of that nature. So I got connected with some other guys that began to live that hippie world because you could dress any way you wanted. You were accepted, and it was cool. Let your hair grow, etc. And along with that came the drug culture. And so for several years during high school and then out of high school, that was my life. I simply say that when you see pictures of folks at Woodstock, that's who I was. Well, my sister, who is 12 years older than I am, came to Tampa. Her husband was career Air Force, and he was being stationed in Thailand. And so sister moved to Tampa for a year while he was deployed, and she got right with the Lord and started going to church. Mm. And I love my sister, and so my sister would invite me to church, and I'd drive up there in my little red 63 Volkswagen, sit in the very back pew, and as soon as church is over, get in my car and leave and do what I normally would do, with my drug world. And so that began to influence me a wee bit. And then along the way, some of my good friends became followers of Christ. I didn't quite follow exactly what they did. I didn't understand it because I had sort of a bitter taste in my heart for church. I, like most people, think it's full of hypocrites and people that say one thing and live another. So I was a little embittered with church in general. But as a result of my sister's influence, and then the pastor, who is a graduate actually of Trinity College, his name was Leon Lay. And Leon would come and visit with me. And John, I was just, I can't remember verbatim what I would say to him, but I know I was rude, disrespectful, argue with him, And I don't know why he kept coming back. But he kept coming back and he influenced me. And so finally, one day I went to church. And when I left the morning worship, I went home, sat on the couch. I can't remember exactly what I said or how I said it, but I got it from the couch, went into the bathroom, and knelt by the toilet. And I prayed a prayer. I don't know what I prayed, although I don't know how I said what I said, but I know that right then there was a transformational moment. You know, I knew something happened, and I had a peace. You know, in the old hippie world, you know, you were always talking about peace and love, and you didn't have either. Very first thing that I remember, John, that was part of that, you can't quantify it, you can't chart it, but it was a feeling of peace and a feeling of purpose. I felt like I do have a meaning. My life does have meaning. There is something outside of me that's real and it's big, and I know who God is now, and it changed the way I thought.
That's a powerful testimony, and so you were kind of maybe in the Jesus movement a little bit?
Yes, I was. It's one of those things, I look back at it, and I see how God was at work, but I didn't realize that that's what God was doing. In the midst of all of that, in fact, in some of our prayer times, we have some other pastors that dawned on me one time. During that era, you had a pandemic in 68.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 69. Yeah, you don't hear much about it, but there was a flu virus going around. You had civil unrest.
Sure.
You had an unpopular war.
Yeah.
You had student problems at universities, and you had all of that going around, and in the midst of all of that, God was quietly working, and some of my best friends from that era are all followers, many of them are followers of Christ. George and Mike and Dale, you know, some of my closest friends. And it's what's interesting, we all got saved in a different context. And it's not like George witnessed to me and I got saved and I witnessed to Dale and he got saved, but God was at work. Yeah.
The movement.
And it was a movement. Yeah. And I look back at it and think, gosh, the Holy Spirit was at work. I am fascinated by that. And I pray that, God, you did it then, you can do it today. Because we have some of that same cultural dynamics going on, you know, and especially several years ago with an unpopular war, you know, civil rights issues, you had a pandemic, you know, a lot of similarities, but who knows that God is still can work in the midst of all of that.
Yeah, that was I'm younger, I'm 50, well, I say younger, I'll be 58, but my brother was 12 years older than me, so he was in the Navy during Vietnam, and wasn't very long. He was discharged medically, honorably. He's since passed away. But I remember the whole era of time very well. Because as a kid, I kind of looked up to all the hippies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started playing guitar.
Right.
But it's kind of funny when I look back, you know. But so you came to faith in Christ, and, you know, and then what was the next step for you? Where did you start to grow your faith? Like, where did your journey take you next?
Well, the journey took me next. During that era, I was constantly trying to avoid the draft. The draft
you
was
and
very
else.
Happy. My number was 136, so I was going to Hillsborough Community College, which they had just started, and I would enroll, get my student deferment, drop out, get my money back. Drop out, get my money back. And so finally, they decided not to give me a student deferment anymore. So I got called up for a physical. And when I went in for my physical, I did some amphetamines and got my weight down to 3 pounds below qualification. So I weighed 6'1", weighed 124 pounds.
Wow.
And failed the physical and got a 2-month deferment, or 6-month deferment. Well, after that deferment, sometime is when I became a Christian. And so the next thing I know, they were calling me downtown for a weight check. And I got on the scale, and I weighed my typical 145 or whatever it was. And they announced to me that I would be hearing from them soon. So I wound up going in the Army May the 10th, and only been a Christian a few months. And it isn't the kind of spiritual journey I thought I needed, but I look back at it now, and it's often say, like, you know, providence is like Hebrew, it's best read backwards.
There you go.
And so I look back at that and I see how God put me in the military for those 2 years and then a year in active Army Reserve, because there I learned discipline, respect for authority, which I did not have, learn how to have a little drill sergeant who was about 5'6" get in my face and call me every kind of name, and I would have to sit there and take it. So in some ways, maybe God was preparing me for ministry. I don't know. You know, I'm just thinking out loud there. But the idea was that God, you know, God put me through that. And I look back and I'm thankful for that. Not only did it teach me a lot of personal disciplines that I did not have, but it also prepared for me to have the GI Bill so I could come to Trinity.
That was my next question.
Right. So. And then it's provided, and I was so blessed to be able to afford to be able to come to school.
Yeah, that GI Bill is legit. My son,
oh, boy.
My son was 11 Bravo in the Army and served in Afghanistan and infantry soldier, door kicker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he did his college, and it was all paid for.
Yep.
And, you know, and it's amazing how well that works, you know.
Oh, and
if you take advantage of it, you know.
Well, the thing too on that, John, those men and women deserve that, and our country owes that to them. It's the least that they can do. My son was Office of Special Investigation with the United States Air Force, and he did 6 years, and he got an email that announced to him that Congress had passed a postgraduate GI Bill, and he had done his bachelor's degree at USF in history, did his master's through Troy, and then when he got out, he was able to do his PhD at Texas Christian University, and it was completely paid for.
That's a blessing.
And, oh, it was amazing. And so he got his doctorate there at Texas Christian and was paid for because of the GI Bill. And he, too, is an Iraqi and Afghanistan veteran doing counterintelligence work, which is behind the wire. Beyond the wires, I think they call it, you know.
Yeah.
And he did amazing well. So your son and my son, they deserve everything that they can get.
We can never repay them.
Never.
You know, and it's interesting. Well, we can go on a tangent on this because we love to talk about it. But I will say that I'm a veteran, a Navy veteran, and the thing that I have learned really in being around soldiers and sailors and things I've learned is they're some of the most loving people you're ever going to meet in your life. They actually understand what it means when Christ says no greater love, right? And so that's a really powerful thing. You know, we have the Colonel Charles Massey Student Group, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, but you know, one of the things that we embodied here, it's a student group for veterans and former military, and if anyone's current military, even students that have never served in the military, but they want to be part of that group. And it really, the purpose of that really is to pull some military bearing in that, you know, and the warrior ethos, leave no one behind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus embodied that right there, you know, I'll always be with you. And he never leaves us behind.
Absolutely.
And so as a Christian, we need to embody that. And then, of course, not only do you never leave anyone behind, but, you know, you really have to not do, you know, my son would tell you, and I'm sure your son would say the same thing, the biggest fear is that you, when you're in combat, that you injure your own troops.
Mm.
There's nothing
scarier.
Collateral
damage.
Yeah, it's the worst, you know, and as you don't mean to, but in the Christian faith, we sometimes do that. You know, that caused maybe some of your early, you know, problems in the church. And you know, I always say people reject Christ for one of three reasons. They're not legitimate, but there are reasons, and that's one is naughty Christians is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Next is they're angry at God about something they're blaming God for that happened to them. And then thirdly, a sin they are using to cope in life they don't want to give up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well said.
You know, but none of them are legitimate,
right.
You know, because man's without excuse.
Right.
The gospel's for everyone. But it's still...
Well, it's those walls that we build, and those that's sort of some of the building blocks of
but
that wall.
I love the veterans. We have some veterans here. They're just, these guys are just awesome. I love them. We got a guy, there's the first leader of the Colonel Massey group, Steve, and he was literally on active duty in the Army, and there was an infantry soldier, and called us while he was still active. So like, he needed to get out of school, I mean, get out of the Army and go into school, and he chose us, and he's been a great leader on the campus, and now he's working in a Christian school and online as a student. But it's amazing to see those transitions. Well, anyway, the next thing for you is, that's a good rabbit hole. I love that rabbit hole.
Yep.
So you came to Trinity. What made you come here? What was your reason to come to Trinity? And by that time, where were you? Probably in Dunedin, I'd imagine?
Yes, Dunedin campus. Well, Leon, the man that led me to Christ, was a Trinity graduate.
Okay.
And then the pastor that inherited me was Dr. Charles Kramer. And Dr. Charles Kramer taught here at the time. He had a radio broadcast, and he also taught here. And so I thought, when I felt called to preach when I got saved. I can't quantify it. I can't, you know, just a sense that I had. Spent those 2 years in the Army, and I said, well, okay, what am I here for? Well, I look back at it, and I don't know why I was there. So when I got out in May of 73, I was going to go to Bible college at Trinity, and I didn't come that first semester in that August, September time. I was kind of avoiding it, maybe. And then Dr. Kramer was preaching on a Sunday night, and I got very, very convicted about what God had called me to do. So Trinity College was here, and I could say quite frankly, when people that I knew went to Trinity, it would just seem to be a natural. And to be quite honest, I thought everybody that was a preacher went to Trinity College. I had no idea. I came out of Woodstock, so I have no idea. I wasn't literally at Woodstock, but that era, I had no idea there was a whole other network of colleges and schools and seminaries. I just thought everybody, I mean, Billy Graham, I knew that Billy Graham had gone here, so I thought, well, I guess everybody does. So I started coming because of the influences of both Leon and Dr. Kramer.
So alumni and faculty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what was your time like when you were here?
It was absolutely amazing. I began in January of 74, and I remember being absolutely overwhelmed. I was a horrible student I wasn't a student, let me put it that way, in high school, could care less about education. And that was one of the other things that God really worked in my heart. I had a hunger to want to learn, and I wanted to learn the Bible. And then one of the very first things I had to really grapple with was learning how to read, and learn how to study, and learn how to do. But there was such a hunger there that it was irresistible for me. And so when I started with Dr. Bragg, I'll never forget sitting in the big auditorium there on the campus at Dunedin, sitting in Dr. Bragg's systematic theology class. And I'm thinking, what is Calvinism? What Arminian? Who was that a person, or is that some like plague that happened? I had no idea. The vocabulary and the glossary of terms and all of that was so foreign to me. I spent as much time looking up the definition of words, and I so wish they had Google back then, that you could Google the term and sit in your lap. But I spent a lot of time in the library and looking up things, because I was lost in terms of a theological education. And so it was great experience. God did so many marvelous things, and Dr. Watson was just great at bringing in speakers and preachers that they not only were dynamic, but they were just real people as well, you know, missionaries. And sitting in those chapel services was huge. In fact, Bill Anderson, who was pastor at Calvary Baptist Church, would come in often and speak.
Oh, wow.
And I was enthralled. He was such a great communicator and such a humble man. And presently, he is one of the members of my son's Sunday school class in Euless, Texas. And that's where Dr. Anderson goes to church now. And so now I get to go there and have the occasion for him to lead the Sunday school class that I'm sitting in. So
that's
a small world. Yeah, that
is
amazing.
Amazing. Wow.
And my son likes to razz me about it, because my son teaches every now and then. And Dr. Anderson complimented him one time on what a good job he did. And so he called me and said, Dad, is Dr. Anderson said that you did a good job preaching or teaching? You know, I say, no. You know, I says, oh, well, just want to make a note here. Yeah, he said that to me today.
That's a great story. The early days in Trinity, I looked back at some of the archives of some of the speakers you had at chapel.
Oh.
And we had another Colonel Sanders. Kentucky Fried Chicken guy. I'm like, what? He spoke at chapel. And then there was Paul Harvey, of all people.
Mm.
And I just didn't, like, what? This little school had all these people. And then, of course, when you start digging through all the archives, you find out a lot of people that are well-known teachers have...
Oh, Dr. Watson was so well known, and would bring all of these godly people into the pulpit, and very influential. I remember the chapel services being such a big influence on me.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a major part of this campus. Mm-hmm. You know, every Monday, every Thursday,
mm-hmm.
we have chapel, student-led chapel on Monday, and we call it the President's Chapel on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But, staff and faculty are in there, students are in there. And we have an advantage now. We are able to use social media and, capture it live so people mm-hmm. that anywhere, you never know when people are watching.
Bingo.
It's not a gigantic audience, but there's people that consistently all over the planet.
Yeah, as well.
It means a lot, especially you have people that recently passed that are on there, like Dr. Cox, his last message. When Dr. Cox passed away, I went and listened to his last message. It was on the Book of James, and it was on the James. I was like, boy, I needed to hear that one today.
Mm-hmm.
And it really got my attention. And but it's amazing. Now, you were influenced by, it took you a while to graduate. So,
oh, yes.
So you and I have that in common. We had life interruptions from life, but you started in 1974. And you graduated in
83.
Okay.
In my senior year, there was some personal items going on in my life that confused me about my call. Should I stay in the ministry? Is it right for me to be in the ministry? And I really had to grapple with that. And so I dropped out my senior year, of all things. And with the GI Bill, you can change your major once. So I changed my major to education. And started going to Hillsborough Community College.
Gotcha, okay.
And then I went to USF for a while. And then God affirmed that I still had a place and a role that I could serve. And so then I came back in 82. And so from 78 to 82, I was out. That's why I often say to folks, the happiest 4 years of my life was my senior year at Trinity.
That's right.
And so I came back, and also the curriculum had changed because of accreditation advancements, and Dr. Kortz was the president at the time.
Dr. Kortz, yeah.
And so I had to, I just needed a few hours to graduate under the old system, curriculum, but because of the new additions, I had to go take those. And so that's when Dr. Massey became my proctor for these classes that were required now. And so I had classwork that I did, and then assignments with him, and would meet weekly with him as I go through these courses that were added to my curriculum.
Now, if someone doesn't know who Charles Massey was, Dr. Charles Massey was an early graduate of Trinity College, when it was mm-hmm. called the Florida Bible Institute.
Right.
Maybe one of the first graduates.
Early on, with Dr. Graham.
And he was friends with Dr. Billy Graham. And you can read about that story in Just As I Am,
mm-hmm.
and it's clearly in there. And they were friends; they knew each other well,
and they stayed close to each other all through their lives.
It's amazing. But Massey went on, and I believe got his. He went after Trinity. He went to Harvard.
Well, actually, he went.
He went somewhere else first.
He went to a college up in the Atlanta area. Graduate Mercer. Was it?
I can't remember either.
Yeah. But anyway, but then he, and I can't speak for him, but I know that one time we were chatting, and because of his experience in World War II, he really had to grapple with what he had seen, what he experienced.
Sure.
And again, I hope that I'm not misrepresenting, but he was basically saying, I really needed to go to the most liberal place I could go to really make me sort through my thinking and my faith. And he came out, and that's when he went to Harvard and graduated from there, and that's where he got his doctorate.
Was it a doctorate in ministry?
I couldn't speak to that.
Yeah, I remember it's something like that.
Yeah, it is.
Because he was a chaplain in the Army.
Yes, he was a full bird. He retired as a full bird chaplain from the United States Army.
And it was World War II, and Vietnam, I believe.
Yes.
And I know he spoke in the, I was reading about him, and he spoke in the National Cathedral, which is a pretty big deal.
Big deal.
You know, I like to say two graduates from Trinity College spoke at the National Cathedral. And, of course, the other one, it was his classmate, Billy Graham,
right.
The very first anything that happened after 9/11.
Right.
You know, and it was an interesting story that I didn't really realize it until years later. But after 9/11, there was no planes flying until the only person that was over North America after 9/11 was Billy Graham being flown to Washington, D.C., to give a message of hope, really, to the country, and requested by President Bush at the time. And he spoke at the National Cathedral. And Graham was not a young man at that point.
Right, right.
But he was the only civilian, the only person over North America after 9/11. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I hadn't heard that story before.
Yeah,
that
it's
is
really
quite
fascinating, interesting thing. And once I realized that, it really broke me up, honestly. I never thought about that. But him and Massey were friends, and you know, I have a book by Colonel Massey. You can buy it. Another alumni, another friend of the college, republished that book of did Massey's work. But I have that. We use it in the student group, and his teaching in that is just phenomenal. It's not watered down stuff.
No,
it's not shallow. But tell me about some of your. How did he influence you? How was he? God brings people in your life and bring you along. How was that? What was that like?
Well, for me, it was when I had him when I came back to finish up, and had him both as in class as well as proctoring other classes that were independent study, and his influence on me was. It's hard to articulate it, but the very first class that I remember just a light coming on was he was teaching the Old Testament minor prophets, and it made the Old Testament come alive for me because he put the Old Testament prophets in a historical setting, and
brilliant.
Both geography, politically, culturally, and I just remember the light going on. Said, "Oh my! So if you really want to understand Daniel, you have to know something about the Babylonian Empire and Nebuchadnezzar." And so it gave a historical connection that made the book of Daniel, and that's not a minor prophet, I do know that if any professors are listening, but that made just like the book of Daniel just open up. Jonah and Nineveh, that was a real city, a very large empire, very ruthless people. Nineveh, Jonah came alive. The book of Jonah began to live, and it was Dr. Massey that helped me see that in a historical perspective, which was really a hermeneutical idea or an idea of interpretation that came alive for me. It really did. And his ability to take some complicated things and speak to where we were, you know. You would ask him a question, and he would be real frank, "I don't know. And when you figure it out, come tell me."
I love that answer.
Yeah, exactly. He was such an authentic man. And I had the privilege and the honor to say a word at his memorial service. And I pulled my notes out and read them again last night and thought, yeah, that was it. He had both that colonel, full bird colonel.
Yep.
He was a chaplain and a pastor, but he was also a brilliant teacher, that doctor and that professor. And he played all three roles in my life personally because he actually lived in Tampa. So I had his phone number and knew where he lived so I could stop by and just chat with him. And I always loved that. And treated me as if I were a closest friend and counseled me on some decisions and helped me with just life stuff. But I think I told you yesterday that he interimed in a lot of churches in the Tampa area.
Yeah, he did do that.
Yeah, and he was at First Baptist Tampa. And I had read something and it really depressed me. It really discouraged me and I was really worried. So I said, can I come see you? Yeah. So went to his office there at First Baptist Tampa, sat there in front of him, and I just kind of whined a little bit about what was going on. And, and you know what? Chaplain Massey wasn't there, and it wasn't Professor Massey there. It was Colonel Massey. And he began to dress me up one side and down the other and pretty much told me, you know, well, he shared a lot of very pointed things to me. And I told him, I said, you sound just like my wife. And he said, well, good for her, you know. And so there would be times that he would be Chaplain Massey, Pastor, come alongside you. And then there was times that he was Professor Massey and would teach, and just the Word of God would open. When I went through the book of Hebrews with him, and the book came alive. And then there were times that, in my life especially, he was Colonel Massey, and I had to stand at attention and salute and say, yes, sir.
You know, you don't get to be a bird colonel.
No.
And not be chasing excellence in every area of your
yes.
life.
That's
physically, emotionally, spiritually, to be a chaplain, to be a full bird colonel in the U.S. Army, that's nothing.
That's not a
that's not weakness.
That's not a small accomplishment in life
at all. And his outlook is just his worldview and outlook was just really we need more people like that.
Yes, I would agree. He had that. That stature about him that you looked up. In fact, I had a friend of mine who said, who would you like to be and who do you most admire? And of course, Dr. Kramer was one of those. I said, you know, Dr. Massey is just, and he said, Massey, you have a vision to be, you know? And he laughed. He said, you're never going to get there, you know? And I went, yeah, you're probably right, but at least if I try, I can get somewhere up that ladder, that would be fine, you know?
Well, I just love that about his story, you know, and that he mentored you. You know, we talk about I have mentors in my life, and you know, being a mentor and pouring into someone's life is mm-hmm. so important. But I love that he didn't take any nonsense.
Oh no,
and really, I think sometimes the thing that's missing, and we have in the Colonel Massey student group, mm-hmm. and we talk about. We're gonna be talking about this with them next meeting next week. But we really extreme ownership. You know, and there's a gentleman out there who was a Navy commander named Jocko. He's popular out there. He's got some popular books, but extreme ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apply that to the Christian faith. Take ownership of your life and responsibility. And God calls us to extreme ownership.
Yes,
He
does.
Let's be honest. I mean, let's be forthright in that and be. He's, you know, if you start reading the book of James, you'll come along real quick and realize. You own everything you say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just amazing when you start to unpack that. But what a great blessing for you. Now, let's fast forward a little bit.
Okay.
How many years have you been pastoring a church, and how did that happen?
Well, my pastor, Dr. Kramer, in 1981 was retiring, and so the church called me, and I was an Ambassador Baptist Church there in Tampa, and I was his associate during the late 70s. And then the early 80s.
Okay.
And then he was retiring. And so I would took a sort of a leadership role where he became the less of the lead pastor and I became more of the lead pastor. And so that sort of was a transition. There was a moment in time where the church officially called me, but it was sort of nurtured over for about a year plus.
You know, that I wish I had saw that more often. I think that's a really healthy way of doing that.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's the way God wants us to do it, really.
It was helpful for me because it wasn't all of a sudden, because it was a gradual getting used to some of the roles and responsibilities.
And, of course, you had that maturity of the person who's been doing it forever.
Mm-hmm.
You have
mm-hmm.
that wisdom there you can go to and say, okay, what am I doing?
Right.
So that's a great...
So that started then in 1984... we felt led to merge the Ambassador Church with the University Baptist Church. In fact, Dr. Massey had been the pastor there at University Baptist Church.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so we merged in 1984, and October of 1984, to be precise. And after that, we just began to develop the ministry there and the heart of what now known as Suitcase City. It's just west of the University of South Florida. 85%, 90% of the 2 mile radius around us are tenants. Very little home ownership, and so it's very transit. And so, but that's where God planted us, and that's where we have felt led to be for the last, lots of years.
Now, what's some of the other ministries you've been involved or currently involved with?
Well, as we served in the community, we began to see a great need for just very infrastructure kind of. The university community was high crime,
sure.
A lot of the infrastructure decaying. It was really a tough area. In fact, it was so bad that the University of South Florida would discourage students from living anywhere west of the campus and northwest. And so it became quite an interesting community. So what God led me to be a part of, I was introduced to who became a good friend, Victor Crist. He had just been elected to the State House of Representatives, and he had a civic association. And so he recruited me to come on board with him on the civic association. So I got involved in community revitalization. And through that, through his efforts and his work, he was our champion. He spent several years in the State House, and then he spent several more years in the State Senate. And then he also was county commissioner.
Right.
And so I worked closely with him. We worked at developing the University Area Community Development Corporation. I was early on part of that organization, and our church was actually the hub for that. As we were beginning to develop the staffing and raising money to develop the corporation, they actually were headquartered at our church, and our sanctuary and our buildings were used for public meetings. So that would have been the early 90s up through the mid-90s that we were very active in that. And so my ministry really got involved in community revitalization through these other organizations. I served on the board of directors with the University Area Community Development Corporation. I just resigned last fall. So I served with them for several years and saw its development and a lot of the great work that's been done as a result of that. It's a incredibly well-done organization now. We have a director, her name is Sarah Combs, and she's done a remarkable job with her vision and her bringing in people to the table to help and bring resources to help bring services to the university community. So that is really a lot of what I did in terms of involvement in the community. Of course, I also, my work with them was, I'm a pastor, and my mission here is to share the gospel of Christ and to minister the word, but I also fully believe in providing a safe, peaceful community for children and families. And so we had an understanding what I did, so I was able to be involved, and I was often asked to do invocations and to bring a word of encouragement at those different organizations. So I was able to take the gospel witness as well into those arenas and have the opportunity to lead some folks to Christ that I was pleasantly surprised. One young man came in and was a deputy sheriff, and he said, I need to speak with you. And so we sat and had Bible study together, and he prayed to receive Christ. And so that was always an exciting time. So we've had those opportunities in that arena to serve and to minister.
I know that area pretty well. My military days back in the Navy, I was in the reserves in Tampa, and we were in that area. We were actually in York Street in Tampa, downtown Tampa, just north of that. But where we go to lunch was right there.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, there was I can't remember this place, but I'm trying to think of the name, but.
I've probably eaten there, so.
Yeah, it's really, it was a very oppressed area.
Yes.
And, and that's a very diverse crowd, which kind of brings me up to now, is that you're involved in an outreach right now in Tampa, and you're here in the college today promoting it. So let's tell me about what you're doing with Muslim outreach.
Well, the Lord brought Matt Walter into my world about 10 years ago now. I was having coffee with a friend at Starbucks right by USF, and they were missionaries with the International Mission Board, and they had served in Malaysia and in the Philippines. And when they were home on leave, his mother-in-law was a member of our church. So I'd always love to go and have coffee and chat with them. We went to the Starbucks just east of the campus there at USF, and Muslim folks were coming in and out. You could obviously tell the women by their attire,
sure.
But you could see, he could spot a Muslim male pretty well as well, just because of mannerisms and things of that nature.
It is cultural identifiers.
Right. And so he looked at me and he said, wow, somebody needs to be reaching out to the Muslims in this neighborhood, in this community. And when he said that, he didn't direct it to me, but I felt like it was directed at me. You know, it was one of those moments where you go, is he talking to someone else? You look over your shoulder. And so it wasn't too many days after that, John, that I was in my office. I was on the phone. I heard a knock at the door. My administrator went to the door and opened and asked for me. And she said, well, he's busy right now. Can I take a message? Well, can you hand him this? So gave her a brochure, closed the door, and he left. I got off the phone. My administrator, Gail, came in and gave me a flyer. And it was Tampa Muslim Outreach. And so it resonated with me because of that conversation with my brother, who's missionary. And I thought, so I tracked him down, called him. We went and had lunch. And ever since then, I've been involved with him and watching Tampa Muslim Outreach begin to come together and really get a sense of how to do what we want to do. I've served with him as a volunteer, doing volunteer work. I served with him on his board. In fact, early on, it was just three of us. But now there's a group of eight godly people, godly leaders that are serving on the board. I've just stepped down from the board because I'm now officially the church and Christian ministry liaison. So my mission is to introduce people, churches, pastors, organizations to the work of Tampa Muslim Outreach. And so that's how we connected, and it's sort of been an evolution of my involvement with him. And we just think it's a God-given opportunity. As you may, or most people can almost observe this, that the Muslim population in the Tampa Bay area is growing at a rapid rate. Sure. In fact, at the breakout session that Matt did today, he asked the question, who in here has a Muslim neighbor or knows a Muslim? Most everybody raised their hand. And he pointed out 10, 15 years ago, I probably would have had no one raising their hand because that population is growing enormously. So our vision, the idea behind it said, God is bringing those closed mission fields to our front door.
You know, I've been, the whole time I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about that. My son, who served in Afghanistan, Kandahar District, part of the troop surge in 2010. And after 9/11, there was a real, people really had a hatred for Muslims.
Yes.
And they were targeting everyone. It was, you know, oh, you must be a terrorist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my son and I were having a conversation about it, and he basically told me off. He's like, Dad, I serve with these Muslim soldiers that are in the Afghan army, and these are honorable people, and mm-hmm. we talk about, and they're not supposed to talk about their faith, right?
Right.
That's all they talk about.
That's all they talk about.
It's great, you know, and so I love that about my son, you know, this talking, interesting thing is his interpreters in America now that serve with him there, and I'm able to have great conversation,
mm-hmm.
and I actually believe that the guy has put his faith in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Our conversations, yeah, and you don't see a Muslim celebrating Easter or Christmas.
No.
So that's what leads me to believe. But anyway, the thing he told me, he goes, you know, Dad, if we won't go to Afghanistan and preach the gospel because it's closed off or whatever reason, mm-hmm. maybe God's bringing them here. And I read something that the most my thesis paper and when I was in seminary was on the most unreached people group I could find, and it was the women of the Kandahar District in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time of 9/11, There were 0% Christians in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's 0.03% Christians in Afghanistan. Mm. So out of something so evil, 9/11, right?
God does something good.
God does something interesting. He brings mm-hmm. in, you know, soldiers that have grew up in Sunday school, mm-hmm. went to Christian schools like my son did, and know the gospel and have, you know, good dialogue, but be a brother, you know, in combat with
mm-hmm.
With a common goal, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's amazing, you know. I had to change my worldview. I really
yes.
was, you know, I had a very closed mind to the whole thing. And now I realize Muslims, you don't have to worry about them believing in God. They believe in God. And they're interested. And there's been several books I've read. Erwin Lutzer talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his talking about that, and really how they have, you know, they're believing in Jesus or dreams and other things.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, it really is amazing to me seeing the we have access to people we never would have had access to. And so it's a good ministry to be involved in, for sure. We're definitely reaching, you know, how do you obey the Great Commission and skip a people group? You can't.
You can't.
You know, and so, but there have been so many great testimonies of people who are Muslim or Christian now,
mm-hmm.
and they're bold. They're
yes.
absolutely bold.
Well, their faith experience, when I got saved, my family was happy. They were glad that I,
yeah.
you know, was, well, they were happy, you know, because they saw my life disintegrating. And so they were rejoicing. I was welcome to my family outings again. You know, I was welcome to be around the crowd. You know, but for Muslims, they lose their families in many cases.
Yeah.
They're rejected. That is a part of that tension that they will have in coming to Christ. Because it's not just I become a Christian and wow, everybody's going to love me and I find this, they find that their culture will turn on them and sometimes turn on them severely. And so it's more than just a good experience for them as we think of good experiences in terms of
sure.
restoration to family, as my case was. But it's really, to me, it's the challenge that the early church brothers and sisters from the Jewish community that they experienced in Jerusalem, especially when they came to faith.
Right.
They were ostracized from the community. They were expelled from the synagogues, expelled from the temple. And so in a way, they understand what it meant to come to faith more than even what it meant to me. And that's what Muslims, I think, have that same tension. There's a lot, culturally speaking, that happens.
I've met quite a few Egyptians in the Tempe area, and they're Coptic Christians,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a lot of them came out of the Muslim
mm-hmm.
background, and interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But
well, we're excited to be a part of it. I feel like our director, Matt Walter, is fluent in Arabic. I was in a restaurant with him not
wow.
long ago, and in fact, taught Arabic in the mission school there in Jordan. And he was a missionary there, but he taught in the Arabic school, teaching Arabic to missionaries. And his degree is in foreign languages, so he's fluent in Arabic. But I was with him in a restaurant one day, and we were chatting, and a family sat next to us in a table, a father, mother, grandmother, grandfather, kids, you know, and they were there at going to Busch Gardens. And so they were having their breakfast. And when they went up to leave, Matt got up and walked over and introduced himself to them and began to talk. And he was speaking with the grandfather, and the father was standing right next to me. And he looked at me and he said, "He speaks better Arabic than I do." And I laughed. I said, "Well, be assured he speaks better Arabic than I do as well." So if there's any comfort in that. But yeah, Matt is... he has a passion and a heart for that community, and it is contagious. And we know that in that work, a lot of Christians are just not comfortable. They don't even know how to start the conversation, and they're not sure if they want to start the conversation. And so our mission is to encourage, educate, and support those within a congregation that have Muslim contacts at work or at school, or their neighbors, and to be able to build rapport and relationship with them, because we feel it's that strength in building a relationship. And that relationship can be over a cup of coffee, and you'll find they are Muslim folks as a whole. They are very strong in hospitality. In fact, in the breakout session there, where Matt said he's from the part of the world there, Northern Europe, where you have a natural 6-foot distance between you and with whom you're talking. But in the Islamic world, he says it's a 6-inch rule, you know, because they're very warm and very hospitable. And so it's just a matter of getting comfortable in that arena and then having opportunity as God presents the case or presents the opportunity to share the gospel, to share your story, you know. And it is a
powers in the witness.
Yeah, how to present a witness and to do so in the marketplace.
Well, we could talk about this for a long time.
Oh, yes.
I want to wrap this up and to be considerate of our time. But anyone that's listening to this right now, maybe is on the fence of, should I go to a Christian Bible college or should I go to a secular school, or am I being called by God? I mean, what's your thoughts on students today, people today seeking education, what their options are? Because, you know, very few people are attending Bible colleges
mm-hmm.
out of the population. That's something that's not normal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're abnormal, if anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts? Because you've been involved in Christian education for a long time.
Right. Well, I feel strongly, and I would, if nothing else, I would think that every college-bound student ought to spend a degree of time in a Christian college context. Because when you think about it, you're building a foundation for your world, for your life.
There you go.
I like to tell folks all the time, you know, when they're going to secular universities and so on, I said they may be great institutions in teaching you how to make a living, but they're void of teaching you how to make a life.
That's fantastic.
And so I think that is so important to have that those values and to have those things taught. I know with my son, I used to really want to encourage him because I knew he had a great mind to pursuing history, that I wanted him to see the Bible from more than just a Sunday school, you know, lesson and some
sure.
stories, because the Bible is rich with history. It's rich. It's just not a lot of really nice stories, but it also gives you that foundation upon which to build your life.
Yeah, and that's good.
If you don't have that, it's really, again, they can teach you how to make a living, but not how to make a life. And I think that this, my experience here, I'm so glad that I was here and spent the years that I did here. And then, as I said, I went on to Hillsborough Community College and then went on to USF. And I was so glad to be able to be in those institutions and have
sure.
that foundation and could sort through. And as what was the great historian said, spoiling the Egyptians, you know, and you would be able to learn. There's a lot of good stuff there to learn. You know, but also to have that core values instilled strong and feel confident in it. There's a passage that I would, that God used in my life recently. It's in it's in 2 Timothy, where Paul is encouraging Timothy. He says, you know, the things that you have learned, continue in them, what you've learned from me.
Right.
You've been taught them since a child, but there's a little phrase, John, that I don't think it gets enough attention, and it says, and you've been convinced of.
Yeah.
And that little expression to me is a difference between a lot of where people are today. They know it, they've been taught it, but I'm not sure they have the confidence and have been convinced that this is true. And I think that's why that Bible college context can help disciples of Christ, followers of Christ, if you will, have that confidence, so that as we go into the world, we're not being blown about by every wind of doctrine.
Yeah, that is really well thought out. I'm going to have to go back and read that passage now.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to have to go back and read that, because I was just reading 2 Timothy the other day, so that's interesting. I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, I loved it. I hope I've had something worth saying.
We have to do this again. This is not a one and done. I think we need to have you back. And maybe talk more about the Muslim outreach.
I'd love that.
You know,
I'd be great if we'd actually get our get Matt here to do a little conversation about that.
Let's do it. Well, this has been the Trinity College Podcast. I am John Keller, along with a fellow alumni, Don Grantham. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And remember, God calls, we equip, and you advance.